Welcome to the Caris Molecular Minute Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Shadi Nabhan. I'm a hematologist and a medical oncologist, and I'm the chairman of the Precision Oncology Alliance, the large collaborative network of Caris Life Sciences that is composed of many academic institutions and healthcare systems and practices, all dedicated to collaborating in order for us to advance the outcomes of patients diagnosed with cancer through precision oncology research and biomarker-driven trials and research. I appreciate you tuning in for today's podcast, where I host Dr. Nate Pennell, a professor at the Cleveland Clinic Foundation in Cleveland, Ohio, about a paper that he is the senior author on. And the paper is interesting. The title of the paper is Modeling Costs and Life Years Gained by Population-Wide NGS or Single Gene Testing in Non-Squamous Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer in the United States. We all know that many patients who need NGS and need molecular profiling do not undergo molecular profiling for a variety of reasons. But what Nate and his colleagues did is they went back and they tried to say, what if patients indeed undergo next generation sequencing? How many lives would we save if we actually do that? And how many dollars do we even save for the healthcare system indeed if we do so? They embarked on this type of research, which was amazing, and it did in fact demonstrate that we would be able to save more lives and dollars by patients undergoing therapy at the right time for the right indication with the right drug. I've invited Dr. Pennell to share the methodology and the results of his paper. That was the first author is Dr. Christopher Lamont, and he and Dr. Pennell is the last author, and to tell us what led them to design this research and what the findings were. So I appreciate Dr. Pennell taking time of his busy schedule to be with us on the Caris Molecular Minute podcast. As for you, don't forget to subscribe to the show and rate the show and write a brief review. Tell your friends and colleagues about the show and always let me know how I'm doing by direct messaging me on Twitter at Shadi Nabhan or by sending me an email to cnabhan@carisls.com. Without further ado, Dr. Nate Pennell from the Cleveland Clinic, a member of the Precision Oncology Alliance on the Caris Molecular Minute podcast. For folks who don't know you, maybe a little bit about you and a little bit of an intro as to where you are and what you do and what you practice.
Thanks, Chatty. I promise any pet podcast you ever do in any venue, I will agree to talk to you about it. So I'm a thoracic medical oncologist at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. I've been here now for 15 years, which is pretty remarkable. And I run the lung cancer program, and I'm almost also the vice chair of clinical research, overseeing our clinical trials unit. I have been doing clinical trials in lung cancer pretty much since my training, but my real love is in treating people based upon biomarker-directed therapy. So, you know, I originally started my training with Lisha Sequist and Tom Lynch at Mass General Hospital right after the publications on the discovery of sensitizing EGFR mutations. And that really symbolized to me the future of how we were going to be treating people with cancer, which was identifying them with a test to find a biomarker that signaled some vulnerability, and then we would design targeted treatments, and that was going to basically save everyone. And while we haven't saved everyone, and it still hasn't worked for every patient, it certainly, I think, has dramatically changed how we treat people with lots of different types of cancer. But really, lung cancer, I think, is the poster child for biomarker-driven therapy. And so that's something that I remain very heavily interested in, and I know you are as well.
I am. And, you know, it's really interesting. At some point, I always remember, honestly, lung cancer was so boring when I was a resident. Like, I never thought I would do oncology and do lung cancer because it was, you know, just chemotherapy, cisplatin, etoposide, and carboplatin. And, You just had to, you know, convince primary care physicians and pulmonologists to even send you patients with advanced stage disease. Things have changed dramatically. And obviously, as you said, with target therapy and precision medicine. But I've invited you to the on the show because I read a paper that you were the senior author on, and it came in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, Precision Oncology. And I found it intriguing because it does talk about precision medicine, but it attempts to look at how many lives could we save if we do broad sequencing versus single gene sequencing. Maybe, you know, tell us how the idea started, what made you decide to work on a paper like this and the methodology, and you know, let listeners know what led to the publication, and then we'll go over the results.
I, as exciting as every new drug is that is approved by the FDA to treat some relatively uncommon subtype of lung cancer, and how incredibly effective these drugs are in clinical trials, I've always been more concerned about the practical reality of how do we actually find these patients and get these drugs to them. And one of the slides that I like to show when I give talks about the importance of biomarker testing in lung cancer shows the survival curves for the osimertinib study in the FLAURA study in EGFR mutant patients, and the global ALEC study in alectinib and ALK positive patients, which really have remarkable survivals, not cures, but for example, the alectinib trial has a 5-year survival in excess of 60% on patients if they are ALK positive and receive targeted treatment for that. On the other hand, I show on the same slide the survival curves from the original ECOG 1594, which was the 4-platinum doublet 4-arm phase 3 study in non-small cell lung cancer that had a median survival of about 8 to 10 months. And the reason I like to illustrate this is if you identify these people, they can live many years with a good quality of life. If you miss them, even though they have that ALK or EGFR or RET fusion, and you just treat them with chemotherapy or chemotherapy with pembrolizumab, which doesn't tend to work in these driver oncogene positive patients, then they end up having the survival that we would have expected 20 years ago, which is a year or less. And so they really miss out on a lot of life years gained, you know, if we want to talk in sort of cost effectiveness speak. But, you know, practically speaking, these patients are being harmed by not being identified. So the project came out of just a question. We were just kind of talking about this and wondering how many people are we missing? You know, theoretically, how many people in the United States every year have one of the major driver oncogenes, EGFR, ALK, ROS, BRAF, MET, exon 14, NTRK, ROS1, you know, all of these patients are there. And if you test and identify them, they can benefit from targeted therapies. But studies are increasingly showing that many of these patients are not being tested and not being identified. So we just kind of wanted to say, if everyone was identified using broad NGS testing, how many life years could be saved, and how much would that cost if we tested everyone and we actually treated everyone with these relatively expensive medications? Is this something that could be supported by our system? And so we did this fancy modeling with our statistician, Emily Zabor, and plugged in a lot of different numbers, which, you know, honestly, the numbers are probably not critically important about how accurate they are. But starting with the assumption of doing relatively good with EGFR and ALK single gene testing, which studies have shown that we do pretty well, probably close to 80% of people get tested with that. But as far as broader NGS, at least at the time that we did this study, it was relatively small number of people getting successful NGS. And that was sort of our baseline. And then we basically showed if we increasingly test more and more of the people, hypothetical people with NGS, and are able to identify more and more of these oncogene positive patients, and we treat them, how many more life years could we save? And so we can go through the numbers if you want, but that was essentially it was really almost to try to kind of, if anything, like give people sticker shock as to how many life years we were missing out on by not successfully testing people.
No, I want to go through the numbers in a little bit. I think it's a very important question. And there are times where you have to make, unfortunately, in healthcare, a business case of why you should do certain testing and certain intervention. Because, you know, some folks might say, well, it's great, you're going to do this, but you're going to cost the healthcare system so many dollars. And by providing the fact you are actually, if you treat the right patient with the right drug at the right time, not only it's the right thing to do, but also you are going to hopefully save healthcare dollars to the system and make patients live better. So is Emily a statistician, economist? Like, did you have to get an economist as well? Because, you know, you and I, obviously, we dabble in economics when we talk about it, but we're not really economists by training. So I always, you know, it's sometimes challenging when you look at cost effectiveness analyses.
It's really interesting. Emily is not an economist. She is a statistician, although we've been very fortunate to work with her on quite a number of the sort of cost and value projects. So I think, believe it or not, there's not that much out there, especially in the oncology field, looking at cost effectiveness analyses. And so, you know, it's a relatively small literature pool to read to get to understand this. Believe it or not, the modeling is not that complicated. It is complicated, but it's not that hard to put it all together. The model itself is relatively simple, you know, percentages of patients that have a particular alteration that you might detect, the percentage of patients that are getting single gene testing for EGFR and ALK versus NGS that may identify all of the different oncogenes. You plug in the costs of the testing for one or the other. You plug in the costs of treating someone per year with either chemotherapy plus pembrolizumab versus an average cost that we estimated for a expensive targeted therapy, which we were very conservative. That's actually probably more expensive than what we modeled. And then you use the Kaplan-Meier survivor curves from the various trials to kind of model out how long they would live and how long they'd be on it, and crunch some numbers, and you end up with...
What do you find?
So basically what we did was we estimated based on, you know, the sort of American Cancer Society's statistics, how many people diagnosed with lung cancer there would be in 1 year, how many of them would have stage 4 disease, how many of them would have adenocarcinoma. We came to a hypothetical cohort in the United States in 1 year of about 89,000 hypothetical patients. We made assumptions that only about 80% of those would be able to get successful testing due to being, you know, unhealthy or not having enough tissue to test, things like that. That kind of is in line with what, practically speaking, probably happens in the real world. And then we used data suggesting that with 80% of people being tested and with about 85% of those being tested mostly with single genes, that we were probably saving about 38,000 life years with treating people mostly for EGFR and ALK. That cost approximately $17,000 per life year gained. And that was sort of our baseline. We then modeled increasing the percentage of people that were tested with NGS up to, you know, all of those patients, 80% of the 89,000 patients getting tested with NGS, identifying and treating with matched drugs. And we found that you could save almost 60,000 additional life years with this strategy, basically pointing out that there are literally probably tens of thousands of people out there who are not all being identified right now every year. And that this actually brought the cost down to $16,600 per life year gained with this strategy. And this, of course, takes into the account that these patients would be spared getting pembrolizumab, which would likely be...
But you factored in the cost of the...
Right, exactly. The cost of the treatment, even though they're living longer and they're being treated with expensive costs, by sparing them other futile expensive costs, it ends up being cheaper to do it this way. And more importantly, though, potentially prolonging survival in tens of thousands of people through this approach. And then, of course, my favorite question was, if we tested every person in the United States, 100% of them using NGS, and every one of them was identified and received treatment, we could increase another 15,000 life years gained over even our, you know, practical best case scenario, still only at about $16,600 per life year gained. And so very affordable from a cost effectiveness analysis to test everyone and treat them with effective therapy compared to what we're doing right now.
So Nate, help me understand this. It's obviously the right thing to do, right? I mean, if I were a patient, I want to be tested because I want to get the right treatment for me. I mean, hopefully I have a driver mutation, as they say, and there's a drug that they give me. We know that it's the right thing to do. We know that you can detect these abnormalities. And we know now you're proven, at least in your model, that you can even save dollars by doing this. What's your opinion? Why is there still folks who are not getting tested? Is this education? People just don't know. Is it nihilism? Is like, what is it? You know, the naysayers, what do they say as to why they don't test?
Well, so the truth is, when you confront people about relatively low testing, you don't end up hearing much pushback. I mean, everyone agrees that testing is important. Everyone thinks that they test all of the appropriate people appropriately. But when you actually look at publications on relatively modern cohorts of lung cancer patients who are being tested, what you find is, for a variety of reasons, it doesn't seem to happen for lots of people. And it's not because they don't know that it's important. It's because it's really more of a process systems issue than it is a knowledge issue. For example, there was a really interesting publication by Helen Sadik and group, again, in JCO Precision Oncology last year, looking at a multi-source database of Medicare claims. So this is like a real-world database of 500,000 patients in the United States, suggesting that ultimately 64% of people who would be eligible for testing were not treated with targeted treatments, about half of them because they didn't get testing done appropriately for some reason, and the remainder because even though they were tested for one reason or another, they didn't receive the treatment. That is not that far out of line with a presentation last summer by Dr. Bruno at University Hospitals and her colleagues looking at a Flatiron database that also showed that probably only about 37% of white patients with non-small cell lung cancer received NGS, broad NGS testing prior to receiving any initial therapy, and with significant disparity showing even worse numbers among our minority patients. And so why is that the case when everyone knows it's important? Well, the Dr. Sadik's paper actually took a hypothetical cohort of 1,000 patients and took through each step of the way. Didn't get a biopsy for whatever reason. Even though they got a biopsy, they didn't get enough tissue, or the tissue wasn't appropriately fixed in some way. And even though there seemed to be enough tissue, they failed on testing for some reason. There was problems where the testing didn't reach the doctors and the patients in time, or for some reason wasn't interpreted, and patients didn't get the treatment despite the testing showing an actionable biomarker. And by the end of that, only 356 out of that 1,000 patients received matched treatment, even though all 1,000 of them potentially could have benefited from the treatment. And so there are lots of different logistical problems with getting every patient tested, that the solution is not to just keep going around saying it's important to test, it's important to test, because everyone knows that. I don't think enough people recognize what is necessary in order to get testing done on every patient. So that is really where I would like to see more time and effort in projects around improving broad testing for the patients that we already have. If we spend a fraction of the money that we do on investing in getting, you know, a fifth in class targeted treatment approved, we could probably save a lot more lives.
Now, your statement underscores the importance of logistics and operations in for sure in making sure things done. Well, I found the paper exciting. Obviously, confirmed what at least I believed in. It was nice to see that confirmation. Is there anything else about the paper that I should have asked you and I completely glanced over, did not pay enough attention to?
I think that any model based almost entirely on assumptions and published data is going to be subject to reasonable criticism about how accurate the numbers are. And again, I don't really want to focus on the actual literal costs that we published or lives saved. But I do think that it is hard to argue with the finding that, you know, tens of thousands of people are not getting tested and not benefiting from these drugs. And I do think this is useful in pointing out that it is not astronomically expensive compared to what we're currently doing, which is treating people based on, insufficient data, but with very expensive and less effective treatments. And so I hope that that is the message that gets out. And I'm glad that you found it interesting and hope that people listen to this and check it out.
Nate Pennell from the Cleveland Clinic Foundation, thank you so much for coming on the Caris Molecular Minute podcast.
Thanks, Shadi. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for joining me, and thank you for tuning into the Caris Molecular Minute podcast. It was wonderful to have my friend and colleague, Dr. Pennell, on the Caris Molecular Minute podcast discussing the recent investigation that demonstrated the value of broad molecular profiling. Thank you, and until next time, take care.